Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Join us for a journey as we go back to the great civilizations of the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin and how did they end? Let's find out on episode 25, The Empire and the Rebel Alliance. Last time on The Fan of History, Shalmaneser III, king of the Neo-Assyrian Empire, restored the rightful king, Marduk Zakir Shumi of Babylonia, to the throne. Israel went to war with Aram Damascus, and Moab revolted against Israelite rule. So, Dan, where are we heading now?
We are heading to the 840s BC and a lot of stuff. But before we go there, I have to mention that the Battle of Karkar episode, episode 23,
yes,
was a huge success.
All right.
So we have increased our listenership by a factor of 4.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So hi, everyone new to the podcast.
Hey, everybody.
Haven't received any iTunes reviews, though, so maybe this is the time to ask you to go to iTunes and review this podcast. And you don't have to be nice if you don't like it. Just give us a review.
Yep, anything you got, we would like to know.
All right, back to the 840s BC.
Let's get to it.
I wanted to mention Egypt, because Egypt is always there, and it's ruled by Osorkon II. Ruling from the north as the ruler of the 22nd dynasty. His son, Nimrodzi, is the high priest of Amun in the south in Thebes. Mm-hmm. And this means that Egypt is unified under one rule, and that will not last very long. It's a brief spell of unity, and Egypt is falling further behind. There is no development, no inventions. Everything is just happening in splendid isolation, like before.
Yeah. That is too bad.
Let's go to the Assyrians.
Yeah. What's going on with Shalmaneser? What's happening now?
Well, the Battle of Karkar was inconclusive in 853 BC.
Okay.
And this alliance still exists, the League of Kings, mm-hmm. trying to fight off the empire. There are tensions within the alliance, but it's still there. And this year, Shalmaneser III decides that it's time to beat them up again. So he marches west against Damascus, and he comes to Carchemish and Arpad on the way. And they refuse to pay tribute. They refuse to supply the army.
It's always been a bad idea in the past.
Yeah, it's always been, and it's kind of surprising that they do. So this is one more indication that the Battle of Karkar was truly inconclusive and not the great victory that Shalmaneser III claims.
Yep.
The Bit Agusi, one of the Aramean tribes in the area, also refused to pay. So now Shalmaneser III has to fight these places that are not really in the League of Kings. He has to get to the League of Kings. And it's very unsatisfying for the Assyrian king. He doesn't get anywhere this year.
Right. You got all these roadblocks in the way.
Yeah. And the Bible still doesn't mention anything about this. And it is possible that Israel has left the League of Kings.
Okay.
Because of problems with Aram Damascus, the leader state of the League.
Yeah, former enemies allying against a single greater enemy seems to be a tenuous unity at best.
I consider it like if you have a really bad feud with your neighbor, and then there is an outside threat, then you have to unify.
Right.
Fight it, but then the threat goes away, and you go back to fighting your neighbor.
Of course. Because we're all human.
And the king, of course, in Israel is a pagan at this time. It's Jehoram who is the king. And he is very much into the Phoenician things, the Phoenician gods. His mother is Jezebel. And there is a civil war in Israel because the vassal state of Moab is still in revolt under its shepherd king. So Israel has trouble of its own.
Yeah, that can't be good. You need to... Keeping an alliance while you have infighting seems really hard to do.
Pretty hard. Actually, they don't consider the Assyrians one of their top problems. This Mesha guy, the king of Moab, he has taken a strong position in the north of Moab, close to Jericho. And he's really, really big problem for Israel. He's extending his kingdom. He has refused to pay his vassalage. And Israel brings in Judah, if Judah existed. We still haven't got any proof that there is a kingdom of Judah. But if there was at this time, it joined with Israel. Together with the king, together with the king of Edom, if Edom existed, it's another small vassal state.
Right.
And they go to war then. They attack south of the Dead Sea into this new territory of Moab. But this is a very dry area, and they don't have any water. So they run out of water, and they call up on the prophet Elisha. Because the prophets have been bothering Jehoram that he should accept Yahweh and forget about these crazy these Phoenician gods.
Right.
And right after they've done this, we only have the Bible telling us about this part, so we have to take it with a grain of salt. But there is a flash flood, and it saves the army of Israel. So they can proceed to attack a place called Kir Harasheth, which is the principal city of southern Moab. But Mesha also invokes his gods. And his favorite god is Chemosh. And he doesn't like listen to simple prayers or prophets. So Mesha has to do something spectacular to gain his attention. So he sacrifices his eldest son.
Wow.
Yes. And that works great because the Moabites win the fight and breaks the siege of Kir Harasheth. And Moab is free from Israel dominance. Mesha moves
for the low, low price of
one dead
infanticide.
Prince.
Yeah.
I think it was a grown-up man that was sacrificed.
Really?
At least a teenage boy.
Wow. Okay.
And Meshad moves further south to get away from Israel to Horonaim and makes that his capital. And the thing about this story that's so interesting compared to biblical stories, this early Israel thing, is that we once again have confirmation that another source. We have a source from the Moabites.
Moabites?
Yes. The Mesha Stele. It was discovered in 1868 on the site of ancient Dibon. It is supplemented by a stone fragment in El Kirak. And this was probably this city of Kir Harasheth. This stone was erected in 840 BC, probably. And it's the longest Iron Age inscription found in the whole region. It allowed scientists to piece together the Moabite language. And it's the earliest non-biblical mention of Yahweh.
Really?
Yes, and it goes into great detail. So I figured we should read the whole thing. What did Mesha say?
The whole thing? Well, I see it here. It's a lot of words. Now, for the listener, I don't know what Moabites sound like or what they did sound like. So this is just my best guess at someone this fanatical. Let's see here. I am Mesha, son of Chemosh-Gad, king of Moab, the Debonite. My father reigned over Moab 30 years, and I have reigned after my father. And I have built this sanctuary for Chemosh in Karcha, a sanctuary of salvation, for he saved me from all aggressors and made me look upon all mine enemies with contempt. Omri was king of Israel and oppressed Moab during many days, and Chemosh was angry with his aggressions. His son succeeded him. And he also said, I will oppress Moab. In my days, he said, let us go, and I will see my desire upon him and his house. And Israel said, I shall destroy it forever. Now Omri took the land of Madabah and occupied it in his day, and in the days of his son 40 years. And Chemosh had mercy on it in my time. And I built Baal Meon and made therein the ditch. And I built Kiriathaim. And the men of Gad dwelled in the country of Ataroth from ancient times. And the king of Israel fortified Ataroth. I assaulted the wall and captured it and killed all the warriors of the city for the well-pleasing of Chemosh and Moab. And I removed from it all the spoil and offered it to Chemosh in Kirjath. And I placed therein the men of Siren and the men of Mokrath. And Chemosh said to me, go take Nebo against Israel. And I went in the night and I fought against it from the break of day till noon. And I took it and I killed all 7,000 men, but I did not kill the women and the maids. For I devoted them to Ashtar Chemosh, and I took from it vessels of Jehovah, and offered them before Chemosh, and the king of Israel fortified Jahaz and occupied it. When he made war against me, and Chemosh drove him out before me, and I took from Moab 200 men in all, and placed them in Jahaz, and took it to annex it to Dibon. I built Karcha, the wall of the forest and the wall of the hill. I have built its gates and I have built its towers. I have built the palace of the king, and I made these prisons for the criminals within the wall. And there were no wells in the interior of the wall in Karcha. And I said to all the people, make you every man a well in his house. And I dug the ditch for Karcha with the chosen men of Israel. I built a roar and I made a road to access Arnon. I took Beth Baham for it was destroyed. I built Bazer, for it was cut down by the men of Dagon. For all Dagon was now loyal. And I reigned from Bikron, which I added to my land, and I built Beth Gamal and Beth Dil of the Thame and Beth Balmaon, and I placed there the poor people of the land. And as to Horaim, the men of Edom dwelt therein on the descent from old, and Chemosh said to me, go down. Make war against Horonaim, and take it. And I assaulted it, and I took it, for Chemosh restored it in my days. So how was that?
I was about to scream, hallelujah, but that would be inappropriate, as he was actually fighting the right. ancient Jews.
Yeah, well, you know.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
No.
We haven't gone into details of these ancient steles like that before, and maybe we shouldn't. So let us know on our Facebook page, facebook.com/fanofhistory, if we should do these things. But I'm surprised that this first-person account of what happened that's non-biblical, and it's pretty unique, so that's why I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah, it's amazing that something like this was just on a giant stone, you know.
Yeah, and it's not the heck like it. He doesn't condense it to the mere facts, but
no
details.
Yeah, added little tidbits.
Yeah,
to spice it up. I don't know.
So, we'll follow the faith of the Moabites when we proceed. But in 848 BC, Shalmaneser once again attacks the League of Kings, because it didn't go very well in 849.
Yeah,
so they march against Damascus and the League of Kings. They fight Hamath and Damascus, so they actually get there. And it seems that Carchemish, Arpad, and the Bitagusi this time are subjugated. But the sources actually differ for this year. So one source says that they fought against Shalmaneser again, but that seems unlikely. There are three small places, and Shalmaneser has an enormous army. These must have been pretty big setbacks for Shalmaneser and the Assyrians because of the state of the poor documentation. And these campaigns are not mentioned in all the triumphal monuments of Shalmaneser. Because he is, as you will see, an even worthier fellow than the Moabite king.
Oh, wow.
In 847 BC, Shalmaneser III decides to fight Pakar Kubuni. And it appears to be somewhere in the west, and it appears to be related to the Syrian wars. I think it might be a place in northern Syria.
I was about to say, we haven't mentioned, I can't think of a time we've mentioned this one before.
No, and actually I don't know where it is, and it's extremely hard to find. The problem with ancient place names then is that almost every nation has its own names for places, and the Assyrians just invent names. So there is some of the Assyrian names are mapped to places we know about, but some are not. There are these great accounts of the northern campaigns that were earlier when they mentioned we conquered 50 cities, and then you never heard of any of those places. You get the feeling there's an Assyrian scribe just sitting there making up place names.
Probably. Where was this? I don't know. Just put something down. Who cares?
How many cities? 50. Okay, I'll make up 50 cities.
Right. Just 50 random city names.
Speaking about northern Syria and the Lebanon, there Phoenicia is still around there, the trading cities of Phoenicia. And Tyre now has a leading role among the Phoenician cities. They are not involved in the fight against Assyria. Some of them joined at the Battle of Karkar, but they are now sort of resuming their ordinary attitude to powerful empires, supply them with stuff, and don't mess with them. Because this is the way Phoenicia survives. There is a big increase in trade on the Mediterranean, and this is perfect for the Phoenicians because they are the gateway between the Mediterranean and the empire. And it's about this time that the city of Kidion on Cyprus becomes a colony of the Phoenicians. And the leading personality in Phoenicia is King Ithobal of Tyre. We talked about him before.
Right.
He is the father of Jezebel, and he dies in 846 BC. He ruled from 878 to 846 BC and is remembered as one of the greatest kings of Tyre. His son succeeds him, Baal-Ezer II, and he is then the brother of Jezebel. And this is the peak of Tyrian influence in the Levant, because they are the allies of Israel and they are now on friendly terms with the Assyrians.
Right. How was Jezebel's brother perceived? I mean, throughout history you hear about Jezebel endlessly, but I have never heard of Baal-Ezer II.
Yeah, we don't know a lot about these ancient Phoenicians. Their records are gone, and we only know about Jezebel and Ithobal from the greatest source is the Old Testament.
Right.
There will be a pair of a brother and a sister that we know plenty about, actually, in about 20 years in Phoenicia. And you might have heard of Dido.
Yes.
We will talk about her very soon.
Okay.
But before then, we need to talk about the Empire versus the Rebel Alliance again. It's round 4, Shalmaneser III versus the League of Kings in 845 BC. And now Shalmaneser starts writing. He claims that he now has a greater force. So now it's real.
He was just kidding the first time.
Yeah. And this time he claims a glorious victory. And it's actually the last reference to the League of Kings. But that doesn't mean that the Assyrians won. The Assyrians did. They claim victory. But the League of Kings might have been totally dependent on the leadership of Hadad-Ezer of Damascus. And as we'll see in the next episode, Hadad-Ezer is about to leave the scene. There's also a claim from Shalmaneser III that the kings of the Kati, and the Kati is a great Assyrian term because it means like people in the north of Syria or perhaps in Turkey or somewhere around there. It's like they put this term on anyone who they associate with the old Hittite empire.
Okay.
So it should be the Neo-Hittites, but it's like pretty random.
I gotcha.
And he actually has time to cut some cedar trees and do hunting while he is extorting northern Syria this year. So it seems that he actually did win a victory this year. And also his acts in 844 BC gives us the impression that he is satisfied with the situation in Syria, because he goes north again. And it seems to be time to check the borders of the north and the east. Because in the north is the fledgling kingdom of 6 years old. And they have enjoyed this brief spell of peace.
Go.
We are now in 844 BC, and the acts of Shalmaneser III gives us the impression that the situation in the west is taken care of. Because in 844 BC, Shalmaneser goes north. And in the north is the fledgling kingdom of Urartu. Urartu is now 16 years old, and do you remember the first years of Urartu? They were like beaten to a pulp, their capitals were razed.
Yeah, over and over.
Yeah, first by Ashurnasirpal and then by Shalmaneser. But now they had time to have some peace, and they have used this time very well. They have built fortresses, they have used their big resources, and they are now ready to fight off the Assyrians. And Shalmaneser knows this, so he attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And he managed to get to the source of the Tigris, where he erects a stele. And the Urartians have second thoughts about fighting him when they see the army. So he plunders several important cities, but there is no decisive battle. And we have some random place names here. He conquers the cities of Sukne and Alsi. And the two places called Dayanu and Melid, we'll talk more about later, they pay tribute. They are not Urartian, but they're border states to Urartu. And this act also strengthens Assyria's western position, because the influence of Urartu will start to leak down into northern Syria later, but not at this time then, because Shalmaneser took care of that. There is also a change in the name of the Urartian king. So it is possible that the original Urartian king, Arami, died in the Assyrian war. But the next king, Saduri I of Urartu, he will claim that Arami is his dad. But there are... So Arami and Lutipri, this king that is mentioned here, might have been the same person. And either Arami or Lutipri might have been the title of that king.
Oh, so might not just be a name. And that's why it gets so confusing.
Yeah, so if they're separate people, this Lutipri guy rules Urartu from 844 to 834 BC, but he might just be Arami.
Hmm, okay.
The one thing that is sort of indication that this is a new king is the Assyrian attack, because the Assyrians love to attack people when they have a new ruler. And this is a very common ancient strategy. Oh, there must be hard to have a new king. Let's attack them.
Right. Just attack while the defenses are down, I guess.
Yeah, well, they have to reorganize stuff. And
sure.
Install new management. Aram Damascus also notes this change in policy, that the Assyrians did not come in 844 BC. So they immediately invade Israel. Because now they have time to fight their neighbor.
Of course.
And Hadad-Ezer is still the king. He managed to invade and besiege Samaria, the capital of Israel. And this might be as an act to make sure that take out Israel so that the back is free when the Assyrians come again. He must have feared an alliance between Israel and Assyria. And this siege is in Kings 6:8-33. The conditions in Samaria is horrible. There is cannibalism in the city.
Wow.
But the end of the siege is somewhat strange. You can read it in the Old Testament. But somehow Hadad-Ezer becomes convinced that there is an enormous army of Kati princes, the Neo-Hittite princes, approaching from the north, and that the Egyptians are coming to help Israel. And that sounds like an anachronism, because we haven't seen any Egyptians helping Israel yet. That will happen later. And he breaks up the siege and retreats back to Damascus, but there is no army.
Really?
So bad intel for Hadad-Ezer.
So maybe if you can just pay off the right scouts, you can make an entire army retreat.
Yeah, somebody in Samaria did something very clever.
Well, that's pretty interesting.
And that's it for this first episode of the 840s BC. We'll do one more.
Okay, what's coming up in the next episode?
Well, there's going to be changes in Israel and in Damascus.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll meet an energetic new king of Israel.
Well, it sounds good to me. All right. Please, please, please visit our YouTube site, youtube.com/fanofhistory. Go there, subscribe, like, share. And like we mentioned earlier, give us a review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. There's also facebook.com/fanofhistory, where you can send us any kind of notes you would like to send us. A webpage, thefanofhistory.wordpress.com. Also, if you like what you heard, there's patreon.com/fanofhistory. Well, for this week, I am Brennan.
I'm Dan.
And thank you for listening.
Thank you for watching. Please like and subscribe. It really helps us out. You can find us on Twitter at @MagicGathStrat, Facebook/MagicGatheringStrat, or on the web, MagicGatheringStrat.com. There you can find articles and free prize-supported leagues. This is all brought to you by our Patreons and CardHoarder.com. If you enjoy this content, please consider supporting us at patreon.com/MagicGatheringStrat.
Life's better with American Family Insurance, because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.